The effect on the young weapons master was instantaneous. He snapped back to rigid attention and rode off on his lizard as soon as his mother waved her hand to dismiss him. Bayan returned to Quenthal. "See that spies are put among you the Gentile soldiers," her fingers subtly flashed. Bayan paused a moment to consider the fierce weapons master and to reflect on what he would do if such spies were discovered.
"Males,"
Bayan added to her daughter, and Quenthal agreed. Males were expendable. Sitting alone as her drift disk floated amidst the army, Matron Bayan turned her thoughts to more important issues. The rivalry of Bergignon and Yutha Gentol was of little consequence, as was Yutha Gentol's apparent disregard for proper command. More disturbing was the Zerfneblin absence. Might the wicked gnomes be planning an assault on Menzo Berenzon, even as Bayenri and her force marched away? It was a silly thought. One Matron Bayenri quickly dismissed. More than half the Dark Elves remained in Menzo Berenzon, under the watchful eyes of Mesbaris Armgo, Triel, and Gromph. If the gnomes attacked, they would be utterly destroyed, more to the Spider Queen's glory. But even as she considered those city defenses, the thought of a conspiracy against her nagged at the edges of Bayenri's consciousness.
"Triel is loyal and in control,"
came a telepathic assurance from Methil, who remained not so far away and was reading Bayenri's every thought. Bayenri took some comfort in that. Before she had left Menzo Berenzon, she had bade Methil to scour her daughter's reactions to her plans, and the Illithid had come back with a completely positive report. Triel was not pleased by the decision to go to Mithril Hall. She feared her mother might be overstepping her bounds, but she was convinced, as most likely were all the others, that in the face of the destruction of House Oblodra, Lolth had sanctioned this war. Thus Triel would not head a coup for control of House Bayenri in her mother's absence, would not in any way go against her mother at this time. Bayenri relaxed. All was going according to design, and it was not important that the cowardly gnomes had fled. All was going even better than design, Bayenri decided, for the rivalry between Yutha Gentol and Bergignon would provide much entertainment. The possibilities were intriguing. Perhaps if Yutha Gentol killed Drizzt, and killed Bergignon in the process, Matron Bayenri would force the spike-haired savage into House Bayenri to serve as her own weapons master. Mesbaris would not dare protest, not after Mithril Hall was conquered. Chapter 18 Uneasy Gatherings.
"Even now is Regveld, who shall lead us, meeting with Brunner, who is king," said a rider, a knight wearing the most unusual of armor.
There wasn't a smooth spot on the mail. It was ridged and buckled, with grill work pointing out at various angles, its purpose to turn aside any blows, to deflect rather than absorb. The man's 50 comrades, a strange-looking group indeed, were similarly outfitted, which could be readily explained by looking at their unusual pennant. It depicted a stick man, his hair straight up on end and arms held high, standing atop a house and throwing lightning bolts to the sky. Or perhaps he was catching lightning hurled down at him from the clouds, one could not be sure. This was the Banner of Long Saddle, and these were the Long Riders, the soldiers of Long Saddle, a capable, if eccentric, group. They had come into Settlestone this cold and gloomy day, chasing the first flakes of the first snow.
"Regveld shall lead you,"
answered another rider, tall and sure on his saddle, carrying the scars of countless battles. He was more conventionally armored, as were his 40 companions, riding under the horse and spear banner of Nesme, the proud frontier town on the edge of the dreaded Troll Moors.
"But not us! We are the riders of Nesme, who follow no lead but our own. Just because you got here first, it doesn't mean you pick the rules,"
whined the long rider.
"Let us not forget our purpose," intervened a third rider, his horse trotting up along with two companions to greet the newest arrivals.
When he came closer, the others saw from his angular features, shining gold hair and similarly colored eyes, that he was no man at all, but an elf, though tall for one of his race.
"I am Besnel of Silvery Moon, come with 100 soldiers from Lady Elustriel. We shall each find our place when battle is joined. Though if there is to be any leader among us, it shall be me, who speaks on behalf of Elustriel." The man from Nesme and the man from Long Saddle regarded each other helplessly. Their respective towns, particularly Nesme, were surely under the shadow of Silvery Moon, and their respective rulers would not challenge Elustriel's authority.
"But you are not in Silvery Moon,"
came a roaring reply from Berkthgar, who had been standing in the shadows of a nearby doorway, listening to the argument, almost hoping it would erupt into something more fun than bandied words.
"You are in Settlestone, where Berkthgar rules, and in Settlestone you are ruled by Berkthgar."
Everyone tensed, particularly the two Silvery Moon soldiers flanking Besnel. The elven warrior sat quietly for a moment, eyeing the huge barbarian as Berkthgar, his gigantic sword strapped across his back, steadily and calmly approached. Besnel was not overly proud, and his rank alone in the Silvery Moon detachment proved that he never let pride cloud good judgment. "Well spoken, Berkthgar the Bold," he politely replied, "and true enough." He turned to the other two mounted leaders. "We have come from Silvery Moon, and you from Nesme, and you from Long Saddle to serve in Berkthgar's cause, and in the cause of Brunner Battlehammer."
"We came to Brunner's call," grumbled the Long Rider, "not Berkthgar's."
"Would you then take your horse into the dark tunnels beneath Mithril Hall?" reasoned Besnel, who understood from his meetings with Berkthgar and Catti Bree that the dwarves would handle the underground troubles, while the riders would join with the warriors of Settlestone to secure the outlying areas.
"His horse and he might be underground sooner than he expects," Berkthgar piped in,
an open threat that shook the Long Rider more than a little. "Enough of this," Besnel was quick to interject. "We have all come together as allies, and allies we shall be, joined in a common cause."
"Joined by fear," the Nesme soldier replied. "We and Nesme once met, Brunners."
He paused, looking to the faces of the other leaders, then to his own grim men for support as he searched for the proper words.
"We have met King Brunner's dark-skinned friend," he said finally, his tone openly derisive. "What good might come from association with evil drow?"
The words had barely left his mouth before Berkthgar was upon him, reaching up to grab him by a crease in his armor and pull him low in the saddle, that he might look right into the barbarian's snarling visage. The nearby Nesme soldiers had their weapons out and ready, but so too did Berkthgar's people, coming out of every stone house and around every corner. Besnel groaned, and the Long Riders, every one of them, shook their heads in dismay.
"If ever again you speak ill of Drisdoerden," Berkthgar growled, caring nothing of the swords and spears poised not so far away, "you will offer me an interesting choice. Do I cut you in half and leave you dead on the field, or do I bring you into Drizzt that he might find the honor of severing your head himself?"
Besnel walked his horse right up to the barbarian and used its heavy press to force Berkthgar back from the stunned Nesme soldier. "Drisdoerden would not kill the man for his words," Besnel said with all confidence, for he had met Drizzt on many occasions during the Dark Elf's frequent visits to Silvery Moon. Berkthgar knew the elf spoke truly, and so the barbarian leader relented, backing off a few steps.
"Brunner would kill him," Berkthgar did say, though.
"Agreed," said Besnel, "and many others would take up arms in the Dark Elf's defense. But as I have said, enough of this. All joined, we are 190 cavalry, come to aid in the cause." He looked all around as he spoke, and seemed taller and more imposing than his elven frame would normally allow. 190 come to join with Berkthgar and his proud warriors. Rarely have four such groups converged as allies. The Long Riders, the Riders of Nesme, the Knights in Silver, and the Warriors of Settlestone all joined in common cause. If the war does come, and looking at the allies I have discovered this day, I hope it does, our deeds shall be echoed throughout the realms. And let the drow army beware." He had played perfectly on the pride of all of them, and so they took up the cheer together, and the moments of tension were past. Besnel smiled and nodded as the shouts continued, but he understood that things were not as solid and friendly as they should be. Long Saddle had sent 50 soldiers, plus a handful of wizards, a very great sacrifice from the town that, in truth, had little stake in Brunner's well-being. The Harples looked more to the west, to Waterdeep for trade and alliance, than to the east, and yet they had come to Brunner's call, including their leader's own daughter. Silvery Moon was equally committed, both by friendship to Brunner and Drizzt, and because Elustriel was wise enough to understand that if the Drow army did march to the surface, all the world would be a sadder place. Elustriel had dispatched 100 knights to Berkthgar, and another 100 rode independently, skirting the eastern foothills below Mithril Hall, covering the more rugged trails that led around Fourth Peak's northern face to Keeper's Dale in the west. All told, there were 200 mounted warriors, fully 2/5 of the famed knights in silver, a great contingent and a great sacrifice, especially with the first winds of winter blowing cold in the air. Nesme's sacrifice was less, Besnel understood, and likely the riders of Nesme's commitment would be too. This was the town with the most to lose, except, of course, for Settlestone, and yet Nesme had spared barely a tenth of its seasoned garrison. The strained relations between Mithril Hall and Nesme were no secret, a brewing feud that had begun before Brunner had ever found his homeland, when the dwarf and his fellow companions had passed near Nesme. Brunner and his friends had saved several riders from marauding bog blokes, only to have the riders turn on them when the battle had ended. Because of the color of Drizzt's skin and the reputation of his heritage, Brunner's party had been turned away, and though the dwarf's outrage had been later tempered somewhat by the fact that soldiers from Nesme had joined in the retaking of Mithril Hall, relations had remained somewhat strained. This time, the expected opponents were dark elves, and no doubt that fact alone had reminded the wary men of Nesme of their distrust for Brunner's closest friend. But at least they had come, and 40 were better than none, Besnel told himself. The elf had openly proclaimed Berkthgar the leader of all four groups, and so it would be, though if and when battle was joined, each contingent would likely fall into its own tactics, hopefully complementing each other. But Besnel saw a role for himself, less obvious but no less important. He would be the peacemaker. He would keep the factions in line and in harmony. If the Dark Elves did come, his job would be much easier, he knew, for in the face of so deadly an enemy, petty grievances would fast be forgotten. Belwar didn't know whether to feel relief or fear when word came from the spying elemental that the Drow, a single Drow at least, had indeed gone into Blingdenstone, and that a Drow army had marched past the deserted city, finding the tunnels back to the east, the route to Mithril Hall. The most honored Borough Warden sat again in his now customary perch, staring out at the empty tunnels. He thought of Drizzt, a dear friend, and of the place the Dark Elf now called home. Drizzt had told Belwar of Mithril Hall when he had passed through Blingdenstone on his way to Menzo Berenzon several months earlier. How happy Drizzt had been when he spoke of his friends, this dwarf named Brunner and the human woman, Catti Bree, who had crossed through Blingdenstone on Drizzt's heels and had, according to later reports, aided in Drizzt's wild escape from the Drow City. That very escape had facilitated this march, Belwar knew. And yet the gnome remained pleased that his friend had gotten free of Matron Bayenry's clutches. Now Drizzt was home, but the Dark Elves were going to find him. Belwar recalled the true sadness in Drizzt's lavender eyes when the Drow had recounted the loss of one of his surface-found friends. What tears might Drizzt know soon, the gnome wondered, with a Drow army marching to destroy his new home.
"Decisions we have to make," came a voice behind the sturdy gnome.
Belwar clapped his mithril hands together, more to clear his thoughts than anything else, and turned to face Ferbel. One of the good things that had come from all of this confusion was the budding friendship between Ferbel and Belwar. As two of the older Zwerfnebli of Blingdenstone, they had known each other, or of each other, a very long time. But only when Belwar's eyes, because of his friendship with Drizzt, had turned to the world outside the gnomish city, had Firbolg truly come into his life. At first, the two seemed a complete mismatch, but both had found strength in what the other offered, and a bond had grown between them, though neither had as yet openly admitted it.
"Decisions?"
"The drow have passed," said Firbolg.
"Likely to return?"
Firbolg nodded. "Obviously," the round-shouldered counselor agreed. "King Schnicktick must decide whether we are to return to Blingdenstone."
The notion hit Belwar like the slap of a cold, wet towel. Return to Blingdenstone? Of course they were to return to their homes, the most honored borough warden's thoughts screamed out at him. Any other option was too ridiculous to entertain. But as he calmed and considered Firbolg's grim demeanor, Belwar began to see the truth of it all. The drow would be back, and if they had made a conquest near or at the surface, a conquest of Mithril Hall, as most believed was their intention, then there would likely remain an open route between Menzo Barons on and that distant place, a route that passed too close to Blingdenstone.
"Words there are, and from many with influence, that we should go farther west, to find a new cavern, a new Blingdenstone,"
Firbolg said. From his tone, it was obvious the little counselor was not thrilled at that prospect.
"Never,"
Belwar said unconvincingly.
"King Schnicktick will ask your opinion in this most important matter," Firbolg said. "Consider it well, Belwar Disengulp. The lives of us all may hinge on your answer."
A long, quiet moment passed, and Firbolg gave a curt nod and turned to leave.
"What does Firbolg say?"
Belwar asked, before he could scurry off. The counselor turned slowly, determinedly, staring Belwar straight in the eye.
"Firbolg says there is only one Blingdenstone,"
he answered with more grit than Belwar had ever heard or ever expected to hear from him.
"To leave as the drow passed by is one thing, a good thing. To stay out is not so good."
"Worth fighting for are some things,"
Belwar added.
"Worth dying for?"
Firbolg was quick to put in. And the counselor did turn and leave. Belwar sat alone with his thoughts, for his home, and for his friend. Chapter 19 Improvising. Catti Bree knew, as soon as she saw the dwarf courier's face, his features a mixture of anxiety and battle-lust. She knew, and so she ran off ahead of the messenger, down the winding ways of Mithril Hall, through the Undercity, seeming almost deserted now, the furnaces burning low. Many eyes regarded her, studied the urgency in her stride, and understood her purpose. She knew, and so they all knew. The Dark Elves had come. The dwarves guarding the heavy door leading out of Mithril Hall proper nodded to her as she came through.
"Shoot straight, me girl!"
one of them yelled at her back, and though she was terribly afraid, though it seemed as if her worst nightmare was about to come true, that brought a smile to her face. She found Brunner, Regis beside him, in a wide cavern, the same chamber where the dwarves had defeated a goblin tribe not so long ago. Now the place had been prepared as the Dwarf King's command post, the central brain for the defense of the outer and lower tunnels. Nearly all tunnels leading to this chamber from the wilds of the Underdark had been thoroughly trapped or dropped altogether, and were now heavily guarded, leaving the chamber as secure a place as could be found outside Mithril Hall proper.
"Drizzt?" Catti Bree asked.
Brunner looked across the cavern to a large tunnel exiting into the deeper regions.
"Out there," he said, "with the cat."
Catti Bree looked around. The preparations had been made. Everything had been set into place as well as possible in a time allowed. Not so far away, Stumpet Rakingclaw and her fellow clerics crouched and knelt on the floor, lining up and sorting dozens of small potion bottles and preparing bandages, blankets, and herbal salves for the wounded. Catti Bree winced, for she knew that all those bandages and more would be needed before this was finished. To the side of the clerics, three of the Harples, Harkle,
Bitterdew, and Belladon Delroy conferred over a small round table covered with dozens of maps and other parchments. Bella looked up and motioned to Brunner, and the dwarf king rushed to her side.
"Are we to sit and wait?" Catti Bree asked Regis. "For the time," the halfling answered. "But soon Brunner and I will lead a group out, along with one of the Harples, to rendezvous with Drizzt and Puent in Tunnelt's cavern. I'm sure Brunner means for you to come with us."
"Let him try to stop me," Catti Bree muttered under her breath. She silently considered the rendezvous. Tunnelt's cavern was the largest chamber outside Mithril Hall, and if they were going to meet Drizzt there, instead of some out-of-the-way place, and if the Dark Elves were indeed in the tunnels near Mithril Hall, then the anticipated battle would come soon. Catti Bree took a deep breath and took up Talmaril, her magical bow. She tested its pull, then checked her quiver to make sure it was full, even though the enchantment of the quiver ensured that it was always full.
"We are ready,"
came a thought in her mind, a thought imparted by Kazithea, she knew. Catti Bree took comfort in her newest companion. She trusted the sword now, knew that it and she were of like mind. And they were indeed ready. They all were. Still, when Brunner and Bitterdew walked away from the other Harples, the dwarf motioning to his personal escorts and Regis and Catti Bree, the young woman's heart skipped a few beats. The Gutbuster Brigade rambled and jostled, bouncing off walls and each other. "Drow in the tunnels!" They had spotted Drow in the tunnels, and now they needed a catch or a kill. To the few Dark Elves who were indeed so close to Mithril Hall, forward scouts for the wave that would follow, the thunder of Puent's minions seemed almost deafening. The Drow were a quiet race, as quiet as the Underdark itself, and the bustle of surface-dwelling dwarves made them think that 1,000 fierce warriors were giving chase. So the Dark Elves fell back, stretched their lines thin, with the more important females taking the lead in the retreat, and the males forced to hold the line and delay the enemy. First contact was made in a narrow but high tunnel. The Gutbusters came in hard and fast from the east, and 3 drow, levitating among the stalactites, fired hand crossbows, putting poison-tipped darts into Puent and the 2 others flanking him in the front rank.
"What?"
the battle-rager roared, as did his companions, surprised by the sudden sting. The ever-wary Puent, cunning and comprehending, looked around, then he and the other 2 fell to the floor. With a scream of surprise, the rest of the Gutbusters turned around and fled, not even thinking to recover their fallen comrades. "Kill 2. Take 1 back for questioning," the most important of the 3 Dark Elves signaled, as he and his companions began floating back to the floor. They touched down lightly and drew out fine swords. Up scrambled the 3 battle ragers, their little legs pumping under them in a wild flurry. No poison, not even a famed drow sleeping poison, could get through the wicked concoctions this group had recently imbibed. Gutbuster was a drink, not just a brigade, and if a dwarf could survive the drink itself, he wouldn't have to worry much about being poisoned or being cold for some time. Closest to the Dark Elves, Puent lowered his head, with its long helmet spike, and impaled 1 elf through the chest, blasting through the fine mesh of drow armor easily and brutally. The 2nd drow managed to deflect the next battle rager's charge, turning the helmet spike aside with both his swords. But a mailed fist, the knuckles devilishly spiked with barbed points, caught the drow under the chin and tore a gaping hole in his throat. Fighting for breath, the drow managed to score 2 nasty hits on his opponent's back, but those 2 strikes did little in the face of the flurry launched by the wild-eyed dwarf. Only the 3rd drow survived the initial assault. He leaped high in the air, enacting his levitation spell once more, and got just over the remaining dwarf's barreling charge, mostly because the dwarf slipped on the slick blood of Thibeldorf Puent's quick kill. Up went the drow, into the stalactite tangle, disappearing from sight. Puent straightened, shaking free of the dead drow.
"That way!" he roared, pointing farther along the corridor. "Find an open area or ceiling, and take up a watch. We're not to let this one get away."
Around the eastern bend came the rest of the Gutbusters, whooping and shouting, their armor clattering, the many creases and points on each suit, grating and squealing like fingernails on slate.
"Take to looking!"
Pwent bellowed, indicating the ceiling, and all the dwarves bobbed about eagerly. One screeched, taking a hand crossbow hit squarely in the face, but that shout of pain became a cry of joy, for the dwarf had only to backtrack the angle to spot the floating drow. Immediately a globe of darkness engulfed that area of the stalactites, but the dwarves now knew where to find him.
"Lariat!"
Pwent bellowed, and another dwarf pulled a rope from his belt and scrambled over to the battle rager. The end of the rope was looped and securely tied in a slipknot, and so the dwarf, misunderstanding Pwent's intent, put the lasso twirling over his head and looked to the darkened area, trying to discern his best shot. Pwent grabbed him by the wrist and held fast, sending the rope limply to the floor.
"Battle Rager Lariat!"
Pwent explained. Other dwarves crowded around, not knowing what their leader had in mind. Smiles widened on every face as Pwent slipped the loop over his foot, tightened it around his ankle, and informed the others that it would take more than one of them to get this drow catcher flying. Every eager dwarf grabbed the rope and began tugging wildly, doing no more than to knock Pwent from his feet. Gradually, sobered by the threats of the vicious battle rager commander, they managed to find a rhythm, and soon had Pwent skipping around the floor. Then they had him up in the air, flying wildly, round and round. But too much slack was given the rope, and Pwent scraped hard against one of the corridor walls, his helmet spike throwing a line of bright sparks. This group learned fast, though, considering that they were dwarves who spent their days running headlong into steel-reinforced doors, and they soon had the timing of the spin and the length of the rope perfect. 2 turns, 5 turns, and off flew the battle rager, up into the air to crash among the stalactites. Pwent grabbed onto one momentarily, but it broke away from the ceiling and down the dwarf and stone tumbled. Pwent hit hard, then bounced right back to his feet.
"One less barrier to our enemy!"
one dwarf roared, and before the dazed Pwent could protest, the others cheered and tugged, bringing the battle rager lariat to bear once more. Up flew Pwent to similar painful results, then a third time, then a fourth, which proved the charm, for the poor drow, blind to the scene, finally dared to come out into the open, edging his way to the west. He sensed the living lariat coming, and managed to scramble behind a long, thin stalactite, but that hardly mattered, for Pwent took the stone out cleanly, wrapped his arms around it and around the drow behind it, and drow, dwarf, and stone fell together, crashing hard to the floor. Before the drow could recover, half the brigade had fallen over him, battering him into unconsciousness. It took them another 5 minutes to get the semi-conscious Pwent to let go of the victim. They were up and moving, Pwent included, soon after, having tied the drow, ankles and wrists, to a long pole, supported on the shoulders of two of the group. They hadn't even cleared the corridor, though, when the dwarves farthest to the west, the two Pwent had sent to watch, took up a cry of, "Drow!" and spun around at the ready. Into the passage came a lone, trotting dark elf, and before Pwent could yell out, "Not that one!" the two dwarves lowered their heads and roared in. In a split second, the dark elf cut left, back to the right, spun a complete circuit to the right, then went wide around the end, and the two gutbusters stumbled and slammed hard into the wall. They realized their foolishness when the great panther came by an instant later, following her drow companion. Drizzt was back by the dwarf's side, helping them to their feet. "Run on," he whispered. And they paused at the warning, long enough to hear the rumble of a not-so-distant charge. Misunderstanding, the gutbusters smiled widely and prepared to continue their own charge to the west, headlong into the approaching force, but Drizzt held them firmly. "Our enemies are upon us in great numbers," he said. "You will get your fight, more than you ever hoped for, but not here." By the time Drizzt, the two dwarves, and the panther caught up to Pwent, the noise of the coming army was clearly evident.
"I thought ye said the damned drow moved silent,"
Pwent remarked, double-stepping beside the swift ranger. "Not drow," Drizzt replied. "Kobolds and goblins." Pwent skidded to an abrupt halt.
"We're running from stinking kobolds," he asked.
"Thousands of stinking kobolds," Drizzt replied evenly, "and bigger monsters, likely with thousands of drow behind them."
"Oh,"
answered the battle rager, suddenly out of bluster. In the familiar tunnels, Drizzt and the gutbusters had no trouble keeping ahead of the rushing army.
Driz took no detours this time, but ran straight to the east, past the tunnels the dwarves had rigged to fall. "Run on," the drow ordered the assigned trap-springers, a handful of dwarves standing ready beside cranks that would release the ropes supporting the tunnel structure. Each of them in turn stared blankly at the surprising command.
"They're coming," one remarked, for that is exactly why these dwarves were out in the tunnels. "All you will catch is kobolds," Drizzt, understanding the drow tactics, informed them. "Run on, and let us see if we cannot catch a few drow as well." "But none will be here to spring the traps!"
More than one dwarf, Puent among them, piped in. Drizzt's wicked grin was convincing. So the dwarves, who had learned many times to trust the ranger, shrugged and fell in line with the retreating gutbusters.
"Where are we running to?"
Puent wanted to know.
"Another 100 strides," Drizzt informed him. "To Nult's cavern, where you will get your fight." "Promises, promises," muttered the fierce Puent.
Tunnelt's cavern, the most open area this side of Mithril Hall, was really a series of 7 caverns connected by wide, arching tunnels. Nowhere was the ground even. Some chambers sat higher than others, and more than one deep fissure ran across the floors. Here waited Brunner and his escorts, along with nearly 1,000 of Mithril Hall's finest fighters. The original plan had called for Tunnelt's cavern to be set up as an outward command post, used as a send-off point to the remaining, though less direct, tunnels after the drow advance had been stopped cold by the dropped stone. Drizzt had altered that plan, and he rushed to Brunner's side, conferring with the dwarf king and with Bitterdew Harple, a wizard that the drow was surely relieved to find.
"Ye gave up the trap-springing positions!"
Brunner bellowed at the ranger as soon as he understood that the tunnels beyond were still intact. "Not so," Drizzt replied with all confidence. Even as his gaze led Brunner's toward the eastern tunnel, the first of the kobold ranks rushed in, pouring like water behind a breaking dam into the waiting dwarves. "I merely got the fodder out of the way." Chapter 20 The Battle of Tunnelt's Cavern. The confusion was immediate and complete, kobolds swarming in by the dozens, and tough dwarves forming into tight battle groups and rushing fast to meet them. Catti Bree put her magical bow up and fired arrow after arrow, aiming for the main entrance. Lightning flashed with each shot as the enchanted bolt sped off, crackling and sparking every time it skipped off a wall. Kobolds went down in a line, one arrow often killing several, but it hardly seemed to matter, so great was the invading throng. Guinevere leaped away, Drizzt quick-stepping behind. A score of kobolds had somehow wriggled past the initial fights and were bearing down on Brunner's position. A shot from Catti Bree felled one. Guinevere's plunge scattered the rest, and Drizzt, moving quicker than ever, slipped in, stabbed one, pivoted and spun to the left, launching the blue glowing Twinkle against the attempted parry of another. Had Twinkle been a straight blade, the kobold's small sword would have deflected it high. But Drizzt deftly turned the curving weapon over in his hand and slightly altered the angle of his attack. Twinkle rolled over the kobold's sword and dived into its chest. The drow had never stopped his run and now skittered back to the right and slid to one knee. Across came Twinkle, slapping against one kobold blade, driving it hard into a second. Stronger than both the creatures combined and with a better angle, Drizzt forced their swords and their defense high, and his second scimitar slashed across the other way, disemboweling one and taking the legs out from under the other.
"Damn drow stealing all the fun," Brunner muttered, running to catch up to the fray.
Between Drizzt the panther and Catti Bree's continuing barrage, few of the 20 kobolds still stood by the time he got there, and those few had turned in full flight.
"Plenty more to kill," Drizzt said into Brunner's scowl, recognizing the sour look.
A line of silver-streaking arrow cut between them as soon as the words had left the drow's mouth. When the spots cleared from before their eyes, the two turned and regarded the scorched and dead kobolds taken down by Catti Bree's latest shot. Then she too was beside them, Cassidea in hand, and Regis, holding the little mace Brunner had long ago forged for him, was beside her. Catti Bree shrugged as her friends regarded the change in weapon, and looking around, they understood her tactics. With more kobolds pouring in, and more dwarves coming out of the other chambers to meet the charge, it was simply too confusing and congested for the woman to safely continue with her bow.
"Run on," Catti Bree said, a wistful smile crossing her fair features.
Drizzt returned the look, and Brunner, even Regis, had a sparkle in his eye. Suddenly it seemed like old times. Guinevere led their charge, Brunner fighting hard to keep close to the panther's tail. Caddybrie and Regis flanked the dwarf, and Drizzt, speeding and spinning, flanked the group, first on the left, then on the right, seeming to be wherever battle was joined, running too fast to be believed.
Bitterdew Harple knew he had erred. Drizzt had asked him to get to the door, to wait for the first drow to show themselves inside the cavern and launch a fireball back down the tunnel, where the flames would burn through the supporting ropes and drop the stone.
"Not a difficult task," Bitterdew had assured Drizzt,
and so it should not have been. The wizard had memorized a spell that could put him in position, and knew others to keep him safely hidden until the blast was complete. So when all around him had run off to join in the fracas, they had gone reassured that the traps would be sprung, that the tunnels would be dropped, and that the tide of enemies would be stemmed. Something went wrong. Bitterdew had begun casting the spell to get him to the tunnel entrance, had even outlined the extra-dimensional portal that would reopen at the desired spot. But then the wizard had seen a group of kobolds, and they had seen him. This was not hard to do, for Bitterdew, a human and not blessed with sight that could extend into the infrared spectrum, carried a shining gemstone. Kobolds were not stupid creatures, not when it came to battle, and they recognized this seemingly out-of-place human for what he was. Even the most inexperienced of kobold fighters understood the value of getting to a wizard, of forcing a dangerous spellcaster into melee combat, keeping his hands tied up with weapons, rather than often explosive components. Still, Bitterdew could have beaten their charge, could have stepped through the dimensions to get to his appointed position. For 7 years, until the time of troubles, Bitterdew Harple had lived with the effects of a potion gone awry, had lived as the Harple family dog. When magic went crazy, Bitterdew had reverted to his human form, long enough at least to get the necessary ingredients together to counteract the wild potion. Soon after, Bitterdew had gone back to his flea-bitten self, but he had helped his family find the means to get him out of the enchantment. A great debate had followed in the Ivy Mansion as to whether they should cure Bitterdew or not. It seemed that many of the Harples had grown quite fond of the dog, more so than they had ever loved Bitterdew as a human. Bitterdew had even served as Harkle's seeing-eye dog on a long stretch of the journey to Mithril Hall when Harkle had no eyes. But then magic had straightened out, and the debate became moot, for the enchantment had simply gone away. Or had it? Bitterdew had held no doubts about the integrity of his cure until this very moment, until he saw the kobolds approaching. His upper lip curled back in an open snarl, he felt the hair on the back of his neck bristling, and felt his tailbone tighten. If he still had a tail, it would be straight out behind him. He started down into a crouch, and noticed only then that he had not paws but hands, hands that held no weapons. He groaned, for the kobolds were only 10 feet away. The wizard went for a spell instead. He put the tips of his thumbs together, hands out wide to each side, and chanted frantically. The kobolds came in, straight ahead and flanking, and the closest of them had a sword high for a strike. Bitterdew's hands erupted in flame, jets of scorching, searing fire arcing out in a semicircle. Half a dozen kobolds lay dead, and several others blinked in amazement through singed eyelashes.
"Ha!" Bitterdew cried and snapped his fingers.
The kobolds blinked again and charged, and Bitterdew had no spells quick enough to stop them. At first, the kobolds and goblins seemed a swarming, confused mass. And so it remained for many of the undisciplined brawlers. But several groups had trained for war extensively in the caverns beneath the complex of House Oblodra. One of these, 50 strong, formed into a tight wedge, 3 large kobolds at the tip, and a tight line running back and wide to each side. They entered the main chamber, avoided combat enough to form up, and headed straight to the left, toward the looming entrance of one of the side caverns. Mostly the dwarves avoided them, with so many other easier kills available, and the kobold group almost got to the side chamber unscathed. Coming out of that chamber, though, was a group of 12 dwarves. The bearded warriors hooted and roared, and came on fiercely. But the kobold formation did not waver, worked to perfection as it split the dwarven line almost exactly in half, then widened the gap with the lead kobolds pressing to the very entrance of the side chamber.
A couple of kobolds went down in that charge, and one dwarf died, but the kobold ranks tightened again immediately, and those dwarfs caught along the inside line, caught between the kobolds and the main cavern's low-sloping wall, found themselves in dire straits indeed. Across the way, the free half of the dwarven group realized their error, that they had taken the kobolds too lightly and had not expected such intricate tactics. Their kin would be lost, and there was nothing they could do to get through this surprisingly tight, disciplined formation, made even tighter by the fact that, in going near the wall, the kobolds went under some low-hanging stalactites. The dwarves attacked fiercely anyway, spurred on by the cries of their apparently doomed companions. Guinevar was low to the ground, low enough to skitter under any stalactites. The panther hit the back of the kobold formation in full stride, blasting two kobolds away and running over a third, claws digging in for a better hold as the cat crossed over. Drizzt came in behind, sliding to one knee again and killing two kobolds in the first attack routine. Beside him charged Regis, no taller than a kobold, and fighting straight up and even against one. With his great sweeping style of axe fighting, Brunner found the tight quarters uncomfortable at best. Even worse off was Catti Bree, not as agile or quick as Drizzt. If she went down to one knee, as had the drow, she would be at a huge disadvantage indeed. But standing straight, a stalactite in her face, she wasn't much better off. Cassitea gave her the answer. It went against every instinct the woman had, was contrary to everything Brunner, who had spent much of his life repairing damaged weapons, had taught her about fighting. But hardly thinking, Catti Bree clasped her sword hilt in both hands and brought the magnificent weapon streaking straight across, up high. Cassitea's red line flashed angrily as the sword connected on the hanging stone. Catti Bree's momentum slowed, but only slightly, for Cutter lived up to its name, shearing through the rock. Catti Bree jerked to the side as the sword exited the stalactite, and she would have been vulnerable in that instant, except that the two kobolds in formation right before her were suddenly more concerned that the sky was falling. One got crushed under the stalactite, and the other's death was just as quick, as Brunner, seeing the opening, rushed in with an overhead chop that nearly took the wretched thing in half. Those dwarves that had been separated on the outside rank took heart at the arrival of so powerful a group, and they pressed the kobold line fiercely, calling out to their trapped companions to hold fast and promising that help would soon arrive. Regis hated to fight, at least when his opponent could see him coming. He was needed now, though. He knew that, and would not shirk his responsibilities. Beside him, Drizzt fought from his knees. How could the halfling, who would have to get up on his tiptoes to bang his head on a stalactite, justify standing behind his drow friend this time? Both hands on his mace handle, Regis went in fiercely. He smiled as he actually scored a hit, the well-forged weapon crumbling a kobold arm. Even as that opponent fell away, though, another squeezed in and struck, its sword catching Regis under his upraised arm. Only fine dwarven armor saved him. He made a note to buy Buster Bracer a few large mugs of mead if he ever got out of this alive. Tough was the dwarven armor, but the kobold's head was not as tough as the halfling's mace proved a moment later. Well done, Drizzt congratulated, his battle ebbing enough for him to witness the halfling strike. Regis tried to smile, but winced instead at the pain of his bruised ribs. Drizzt noted the look and skittered across in front of Regis, meeting the charge as the kobold formation shifted to compensate for the widening breach. The drow scimitars went into a wild dance, slashing and chopping, often banging against the low-hanging stalactites, throwing sparks, but more often connecting on kobolds. To the side, Catti Bree and Brunner had formed up into an impromptu alliance, Brunner holding back the enemy while Catti Bree and Cutter continued to clear a higher path, dropping the hanging stones one at a time. Across the way, though, the dwarves remained sorely pressed, with two down and the other five taking many hits. None of the friends could get to them in time, they knew. None could cross through the tight formation. None except Guinevar. Flying like a black arrow, the panther bored on, running down kobold after kobold, shrugging off many wicked strikes. Blood streamed from the panther's flanks, but Guinevar would not be deterred. She got to the dwarves and bolstered their line, and their cheer at her appearance was of pure delight and salvation. A song on their lips, the dwarves fought on, the panther fought on, and the kobolds could not finish the task. With the press across the way, the formation soon crumbled, and the dwarven group was reunited, that the wounded could be taken from the cavern. Drizzt and Catibri's concern for Gwenivar was stolen by the panther's roar and its flight, as Gwenivar led the five friends off to the next place where they would be needed most.
Bitterdew closed his eyes, wondering what mysteries death would reveal. He hoped there would be some, at least. He heard a roar, then a clash of steel in front of him, then came a grunt, and the sickening thud of a torn body slapping against the hard floor. "They are fighting over who gets to kill me," the mage thought. More roars, dwarven roars, and more grunts, more torn bodies falling to the stone. Bitterdew opened his eyes to see the kobold ranks decimated, to see a handful of the dirtiest, smelliest dwarves imaginable hopping up and down around him, pointing this way and that, as they of the Gutbuster Brigade tried to figure out where they might next cause the most havoc. Bitterdew took a moment to regard the kobolds. A dozen corpses that had been more than killed. "Shredded?" he whispered, and he nodded, deciding that was a better word.
"You're all right now," said one of the dwarves. Bitterdew thought he had heard this one's name as Thibbledorf Quent or some such thing, not that anyone named Bitterdew could toss insults regarding names. "And me and me own are off,"
the wild battle-rager huffed. Bitterdew nodded, then realized he still had a serious problem. He had only prepared for one spell that could open such a dimensional door, and that one was wasted. The enchantment expired as he had battled with the kobolds.
"Wait!"
he screamed at Puent, and he surprised himself and the dwarf, for along with his words came out a canine-like yelp. Puent regarded the harpal curiously. He hopped up right before Bitterdew and cocked his head to the side, a movement exaggerated by the tilting helmet spike.
"Wait! Pray do not run off, good and noble dwarf," Bitterdew said sweetly, needing assistance.
Puent looked around and behind, as if trying to figure out who this mage was talking to. The other gutbusters were similarly confused, some standing and staring blankly, scratching their heads. Puent poked a stubby, dirty finger into his own chest, his expression showing that he hardly considered himself good and noble.
"Do not leave me," Bitterdew pleaded. "You're still alive," Puent countered, "and there's not much for killing over here."
As though that were explanation enough, the battle rager spun and took a stride away.
"But I failed, ooh," Bitterdew wailed,
and a howl escaped his lips at the end of the sentence.
"Ye failed, ooh?"
Puent asked.
"Oh, we are all doomed," the howling mage went on dramatically. "It's too far."
All the battle ragers were around Bitterdew by this point, intrigued by the strange accent or whatever it was. The closest enemies, a band of goblins, could have attacked then, but none wanted to go anywhere near this wild troop, a point made especially clear with the last group of kobolds lying in bloody pieces around the area.
"Ye better be quick and to the point,"
Puent, anxious to kill again, barked at Bitterdew.
"Ooh!" "And stop the damned howling," the battle rager demanded.
In truth, poor Bitterdew wasn't howling on purpose. In the stress of the situation, the mage who had lived so long as a dog was unintentionally recalling the experience, discovering once more those primal canine instincts. He took a deep breath and pointedly reminded himself he was a man, not a dog.
"I must get to the tunnel entrance,"
he said, without a howl, yip, or yelp.
"The Drow Ranger bade me to send a spell down the corridor." "I'm not for caring for wizard stuff,"
Puent interrupted and turned away once more.
"Are ye for dropping the stinking tunnel on the stinking drow's heads?"
Bitterdew asked in his best battle rager imitation.
"Bah!"
Puent snorted, and all the dwarven heads were bobbing eagerly around him.
"Me and me own'll get you there."
Bitterdew took care to keep his visage stern, but silently thought himself quite clever for appealing to the wild dwarves' hunger for carnage. In the blink of a dog's eye, Bitterdew was swept up in the tide of running gutbusters. The wizard suggested a roundabout route, skirting the left-hand or northern side of the cavern, where the fighting had become less intense. Silly mage!
The Gutbuster Brigade ran straight through, ran down kobolds and the larger goblins who had come in behind the kobold ranks. They almost buried a couple of dwarves who weren't quick enough in diving aside. They bounced off stalagmites, ricocheting and rolling on. Before Bitterdew could even begin to protest the tactic, he found himself nearing the appointed spot, the entrance to the tunnel. He spent a brief moment wondering which was faster, a spell opening a dimensional door or a handful of battle-hungry battle ragers. He even entertained the creation of a new spell, Battle Rager Escort. But he shook that notion away as a more immediate problem. A pair of huge, bull-headed minotaurs and a dark elf behind them entered the cavern.
"Defensive posture!" cried Bitterdew. "You must hold them off! Defensive posture!"
Silly mage. The closest two gutbusters flew headlong, diving into the feet of the towering 8-foot monsters. Before they even realized what had hit them, the minotaurs were falling forward. Neither made it unobstructed to the ground, though, as Puente and another wild-eyed dwarf roared in, butting the minotaurs head to head. A globe of darkness appeared behind the tumble, and the drow was nowhere to be seen. Bitterdew wisely began his spell-casting. The drow were here. Just as Drizzt had figured, the dark elves were coming in behind the kobold fodder. If he could get the fireball away now, if he could drop the tunnel. He had to force the words through a guttural, instinctual growl coming from somewhere deep in his throat. He had the urge to join the gutbusters, who were all clamoring over the fallen minotaurs, taking the brutes apart mercilessly. He had the urge to join in the feast.
"The feast?" he asked aloud.
Bitterdew shook his head and began again, concentrating on the spell. Apparently, hearing the wizard's rhythmic cadence, the drow came out of the darkness, hand crossbow up and ready. Bitterdew closed his eyes, forced the words to flow as fast as possible. He felt the sting of the dart right in the belly, but his concentration was complete and he did not flinch, did not interrupt the spell. His legs went weak under him. He heard the drow coming, imagined a shining sword poised for a killing strike. Bitterdew's concentration held. He completed the Dwyamer, and a small glowing ball of fire leaped out from his hand, soared through the darkness beyond, down the tunnel. Bitterdew teetered with weakness. He opened his eyes, but the cavern around him was blurry and wavering. Then he fell backward, felt as though the floor were rushing up to swallow him. Somewhere in the back of his mind, he expected to hit the stone hard, but then the fireball went off. Then the tunnel fell.
Chapter 21. One for the Good Guys. A heavy burden weighed on the most honored Borough Warden's strong shoulders, but Belwar did not stoop as he marched through the long, winding tunnels. He had made the decision with a clear mind and definite purpose, and he simply refused to second-guess himself all the way to Mithril Hall. His opponents in the debate had argued that Belwar was motivated by personal friendship, not the best interests of the Zwerfnebli. Ferbel had learned that Drizzt O'Urden, Belwar's drow friend, had escaped Menzo Berenzon, and the drow march, by all indications, was straight for Mithril Hall, no doubt motivated in part by Lolth's proclaimed hatred of the renegade. Would Belwar lead Blingdenstone to war, then, for the sake of a single drow? In the end, that vicious argument had been settled not by Belwar, but by Ferbel, another of the oldest Zwerfnebli, another of those who had felt the pain most keenly when Blingdenstone had been left behind.
"A clear choice we have," Ferbel had said. "Go now, and see if we can aid the enemies of the Dark Elves, or a new home we must find. For the drow will surely return, and if we stand, we stand alone."
It was a terrible, difficult decision for the Council and for King Schnicktick. If they followed the Dark Elves and found their suspicions confirmed, found a war on the surface, could they even count on the alliance of the surface dwarves and the humans, races the deep gnomes did not know? Belwar assured them they could. With all his heart, the most honored Borough Warden believed that Drizzt, and any friends Drizzt had made, would not let him down. And Ferbel, who knew the outside world so well, but was, by his own admission, somewhat ignorant of the surface, agreed with Belwar, simply on the logic that any race, even not-so-intelligent goblins, would welcome allies against the Dark Elves.
So Schnicktick and the council had finally agreed, but like every other decision of the ultimately conservatives Verfnebli, they would only go so far. Belwar could march in pursuit of the drow, and Ferbel with him, along with any gnomes who volunteered. They were scouts, Schnicktick had emphasized, and no marching army. The Zwerfneblin king and all those who had opposed Belwar's reasoning were surprised to find how many volunteered for the long, dangerous march. So many, in fact, that Schnicktick, for the simple sake of the city operation, had to limit the number to 15 score. Belwar knew why the other Zwerfnebli had come, and knew the truth of his own decision. If the Dark Elves went to the surface and overwhelmed Mithril Hall, they would not allow the gnomes back into Blingdenstone. Menzo Berenzon did not conquer, then leave. No, it would enslave the dwarves and work the mines as its own. Then pity Blingdenstone, for the Zwerfneblin city would be too close to the easiest routes to the conquered land. So, though all of these Zwerfnebli, Belwar and Ferbel included, were marching farther from Blingdenstone than they had ever gone before, they knew that they were, in effect, fighting for their homeland. Belwar would not second-guess that decision. And keeping that in mind, his burden was lessened. Bitterdew put the fireball far down the tunnel, but the narrow ways could not contain the sheer volume of the blast. A line of fire rushed out of the tunnel, back into the cavern, like the breath of an angry red dragon, and Bitterdew's own clothes lit up. The mage screamed, as did every dwarf and kobold near him, as did the next line of minotaurs rushing down for the cavern, as did the skulking dark elves behind them. In the moment of the wizard's fireball, all of them screamed, and just as quickly, the cries went away, extinguished, overwhelmed by hundreds of tons of dropping stone. Again the backlash swept into the cavern, a blast so strong that the gust of it blew away the fires licking at Bitterdew's robes. He was flying suddenly, as were all those near him, flying and dazed, pelted with stone, and extremely lucky, for none of the dropping stalactites or the heavy stone displaced in the cavern squashed him. The ground trembled and bucked, one of the cavern walls buckled, and one of the side chambers collapsed. Then it was done. And the tunnel was gone, just gone, as though it had never been there, and the chamber that had been named for the dwarf Tunnelt seemed much smaller. Bitterdew pulled himself up from the piled dust and debris shakily and brushed the dirt from his glowing gemstone. With all the dust in the air, the light from the enchanted stone seemed meager indeed. The wizard looked at himself, seeing more skin than clothing, seeing dozens of bruises and bright red on one arm, under the clinging dust where the fires had gotten to his skin. A helmet spike, bent slightly to the side, protruded from a pile not far away. Bitterdew was about to speak a lament for the battle rager, who had gotten him to the spot, but Pwent suddenly burst up from the dust, spitting pebbles and smiling crazily.
"Well done!" The battle rager roared. "Do it again!"
Bitterdew started to respond, but then he swooned, the insidious drow poison defeating the momentary jolt of adrenaline. The next thing the unfortunate wizard knew, Pwent was holding him up, and he was gagging on the most foul-tasting concoction ever brewed. Foul but effective, for Bitterdew's grogginess was no more.
"Gutbuster!"
Pwent roared, patting the trusty flask on his broad belt. As the dust settled, the bodies stirred one by one. To a dwarf, the Gutbuster Brigade, tougher than the stone, remained, and the few kobolds that had survived were cut down before they could plead. The way the cavern had collapsed, with the nearest side chamber gone and the wall opposite that having buckled, this small group found itself cut off from the main force. They weren't trapped, though, for one narrow passage led to the left, back toward the heart of Tunnelt's cavern. The fighting in there had resumed, so it seemed from the ring of metal and the calls of both dwarves and kobolds. Unexpectedly, Thibbledorf Pwent did not lead his force headlong into the fray. The passage was narrow at this end, and seemed to narrow even more just a short way in, so much so that Pwent didn't even think they could squeeze through. Also, the battle rager spotted something over Bitterdew's shoulder, a deep crack in the wall to the side of the dropped tunnel. As he neared the spot, Pwent felt the stiff breeze rushing out of the crack as the air pressure in the tunnels beyond adjusted to the catastrophe.
Pwen hooted and slammed the wall below the crack with all his strength. The loose stone gave way and fell in, revealing a passageway angling into the deeper corridors beyond.
"We should go back and report to King Brunner,"
Bitterdew reasoned, "or go as far as the tunnel takes us, to let them know we are in here, that they might dig us out."
Pwent snorted.
"Wouldn't be much at scouting if we let this tunnel pass," he argued. "If the Drow find it, they'll be back quicker than Brunner's expecting. Now that's a report worth giving."